steady for the ride of my life. Oh, cause what I got in mind, baby, you won't be needing no Viagra or love potion. Cause I got plenty of what my mama gave me, making nature ride. So baby, let nature take its course, go with the flow, wherever the wind blows, take it nice and slow.
Right, welcome everyone. This is DUW, The Buzz, and the Soul Savvy Show with your hosts, EB and Q Lynn Green. Good evening, folks. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Will?
Terrific, terrific. A little warm out here in Southern California, like 100 degrees, so I hope you guys are much cooler back there.
Oh, yeah, not that hot.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to a great show. Q Lynn.
Yeah, I think. Hold on just a second. Sorry, I was getting feedback in my ear. Okay. Tonight, we got a special guest. Oh, welcome. I think we have Lee Treble on. He's a musician, producer, songwriter. all that. How are you doing before we get anything started off?
If you're got like C-level producer, I'm not like a super duper producer, but you can go with C-level producer and we're good to go.
C-level. You know, yeah. You got credits, man. You
right.
Nobody can flaunt that.
All
right.
Like, D+, fine. D+. Is that better?
D+. Oh, you gonna sell it short like that. You got credits, man. Don't
say nobody.
You got a whole bio. I wish I could get like at least one credit. Like that was like, cause all my credits was like, it's all right, but you didn't get on the album. Like those are my credits. Like it was good enough. They was like in the bad set. They was like, yeah, the album, they only wanted 12 on this one, but you good for the next one. Like that's all my credits. So you doing all right.
I've been there and it's been 12 years in the making. So I'm just blessed to be doing what I'm doing right now.
Oh man.
It's amazing.
You're still doing it. I know you had said something. I think I casually, just looked on Twitter one day and say something about that you were going back to the corporate world. You're already going back?
Yeah. So, basically what happened was, I was actually, I auditioned for, a role with, it's called Sony Enrage Entertainment. So Sony was doing the distribution and stuff. So, I was actually on my way to the audition and I got fired from my regular job. Like I got in a car accident and the same day I got fired. So I was like, I'm going to take this as a sign. So, last year I've been working for Sony, in Enrage Entertainment and I've been doing a lot of production work in LA. So I've been doing that for the last year. More or less, you know, just making some money, traveling like crazy and stuff. And finally, the project was done. Work kind of slowed down. And my wife was giving me, you know, dirty looks like, yo, all right, bro, bills are piling up. So I used my degree and now I'm back in corporate America. Yes. But I needed a break. Music is just very exhausting and the traveling was just a lot.
Oh, man.
I live in Phoenix. I worked in LA. So I was driving 5 hours and it was a lot of wear and tear. So,
yeah, I completely get that. And for all the listeners, that I just came and rushed in because I was like, oh man, we gotta get to it. But he's from Arizona. I didn't know that. I thought you were from somewhere. I don't know what it is. I just think every musician is from like North Carolina or something. I don't know what it is, but you just look like you were from North Carolina. So, because sometimes I be trying to guess where some musicians are from. I'm like, oh, he looks like he's from North Carolina, but that was news to me because I didn't know that. I thought you were from like North Carolina, so I knew for sure you was gonna say that.
You're not used to seeing Arizona people from Arizona, like black people, one, because like Arizona for the record is like 3% black, and also a lot of black people out here aren't cultured, so like, you know, they may have cousins in the South and East or whatever, or West Coast.
Right.
But a lot of us are kind of we kind of grew up kind of bland. So, but I was fortunate. My dad's from Alabama and my mom's from Florida. So I was able to retain. I tell people I'm a Southern gentleman with West Coast sensibilities. So it's kind of a good mix. But yeah, there are black people in Arizona, but you know, it's still Arizona. Still really racist. And yeah.
You know what? I've been doing some gigs there for a while. It's actually not that bad. To me, I guess I'm going to the right spots because I think from, was it a little bit past, I'm trying to think of that little, I went to go see King. I think it's a little, I forgot the name of that town that was, it was like an hour, 2 hours from, I think, what's it called, Mesa, Arizona? Am I saying it right?
Mesa,
yeah.
Yeah,
it was
Mesa,
And it did seem that, I guess I got to go to certain parts. I guess it's like Oklahoma because people say some parts to Oklahoma is racist, but it's like, it just depends on what side of town you go in. Or what, like if you go to a small town, like a hick town, yeah, of course, you don't get that all day. But if you go to if you go to Oklahoma City or something, like a bigger city, more populated, you won't see that much unless you go to that side of town. But that's just me, but yeah.
The thing about Arizona and Phoenix basically is like, it's not overt racism, it's like legislative racism. So like, it's way more racist toward Mexicans than it's black people. They don't really care about us. We're kind of just here and there, kind of spread out or whatever. But yeah, it's a little bit more legislated and as opposed to overt. So I don't know, but it's cool. It's my home state, hometown, home city. So
I just got a couple more. I've got a couple more questions, and we can move on to the savvy update. I was going to ask you, what genre of music do you love playing? Like, in terms of, like, being a musician, like, one that comes to you, like, easily, like, what's your favorite genre to play that comes to you without question?
I think these two genres kind of go hand-in-hand. I would say gospel and soul. And the reason being is because, you know, I grew up in the church. My dad's a pastor, preacher, you know, PK. I am the worst one, just so you know. PK is trying to deny that they're the worst one. I am the worst one. But, you know, whatever. So I would say gospel because you just get that. You get a sense of playing from your heart, playing from your soul, playing from within. It's one thing to play a chord, but if you play it a certain way, it can really turn heads and stuff. And I will say soul. I grew up real cultured. I grew up real sheltered. So I didn't listen to any secular music growing up. So all I listened to was Kirk Franklin and Hezekiah Walker. And that was like my musical foundation. So I think we, as a musician, the older you get, the more you kind of revert back to what you grew up listening to as far as what you create. So that's my foundation. And that's what comes easiest for me.
Man, I probably would came. See, my family, my grandmother is like a big church goer, so she was probably the only one in the family that went religiously like every Sunday. But and she raised her kids, like my dad and all them, to go to church and stuff like that. But my dad, he never like went to, like, he was like 20 something, like in his early 20s when he had me, so he wasn't like going to church that often. So I was listening to like No Limit. Like, I was all that and going to church. Right, exactly. Like, Cash Money, like the Taking Over for the 99, 2000. I was listening to that when I finally got back into church or whatever. I tell this all the time. I don't care. I used to play Prince in church. I used to play Too Short in church. I played.
Yeah.
I play all that. I don't care. But, it was a lot of musicians. It was, one of my mentors. He's still, he's an organist. He, like, encouraged me to do that because that's the only way I understood gospel music. Like, I'll be a dead serious. Like, people think I'd be lying. I'm like, if it wasn't for playing that, like, all that music is the same stuff anyway. Like, everybody takes from, like, gospel music absolutely takes from soul music and R&B. It's just the blues and all that stuff. But yeah. What was another question I had? Oh yeah. You mentioned earlier with traveling back and forth from Phoenix to LA. I was gonna ask, like, in terms of just, were you just doing producing, or were you gonna do like other avenues of musicianship, like a touring? Like, have you done that before, like being a touring musician or a backing musician, or you interested in doing stuff like that, or is it just music producing?
I have done that in the past. I have done touring. I have done touring in the past. Like, in my early 20s, I think it was, you know, easier to do, but I have a family and stuff now, so. I prefer the production side because I can do it from home and just come to the studio. As far as what I was doing in LA, I was doing a lot of producing, songwriting, arranging. I executive produced two other projects outside of Sony. And, basically I was the creative force for both of those projects. And, basically I was just trying to put as much creative energy as possible while I was out there. As far as, musicians, I always tell people, you know, like to, I guess, you know, comment on my musicianship, but I always tell people I'm a better producer because you can spend more time at home being a better producer. I've been playing professionally only for about 10 or 11 years. I didn't grow up playing in church or anything like that. Right. I kind of resented it actually because I was like, but it brought me back in when I was about 19. So I'm a musician by trade, but I think production is my passion. Production is something where you can be, production, I always say, it's beats plus vision. If you can create the idea, like Quincy Jones says, the idea is 75% of the song. So if you can create the idea, you can create the song. And so that's the way I approach, you know, production and produce creating music. If I wanted to, you know, go to like a bar or go to a venue and just play music every weekend, I could do that. But I'm at a point now where I'm like, okay, I'm a creative by nature, so I'm just trying to make sure that I put as much creative energy out there as possible because at the end of the day, that's what gives me fulfillment. And that's what people look to me to provide, especially out here in Phoenix where there's not a lot of creatives. There's a lot of people doing the same stuff a different weekend. So.
Man, that's cool. Yeah. And as soon as we get through with the savvy updates, I was going to play the song Doyle DeVille's submit to you. That joint is hot. But I was going to ask Eric, how are you doing? What you been up to since last week?
Man, I'm great. The same thing I do every week. Work for the man 5 days
work
a week.
For the man.
Working for the man 5 days a week, and I finally get a day to just unwind and relax. So I'm great.
Man, I didn't get any up. I didn't even check for the other. I was sick for, like, the past couple of days. I almost forgot to send all this stuff because I had a sore throat and a head cold. And so whenever I have a head cold, I'm not doing nothing. And I was trying. I was supposed to drive back to Dallas the other night. I was like, nope, because I'm going to fall asleep. And I will pass out somewhere in the middle of the street somewhere. I was like, nope, can't do that. But, yeah, I was sick, and I was trying to must up a whole, because I knew we were going to do this. I was like, let me get some energy going. But, yeah, I don't think we have any updates. I didn't even check them to see. I know for sure they liked the, I think it was, what was you saying? Were you saying something about, what was it, Johnny Gill? They liked that one, that
oh,
whole,
man.
That meme or whatever.
Y'all gonna get me in trouble with Johnny Gill. You know Johnny's my boy.
Apparently not. You're putting this picture up there with Eddie Murphy and stuff, talking about my little secret.
Listen.
Oh, that was you? That was you?
That might have been me. That might have been me.
That was hilarious.
Just being ridiculous. Man, we got so much crazy stuff to talk about. I guess, when you get to the song, we get to break, and then we get into, I think I got maybe two Raggedy People news. We ain't gonna spend that much time on it like we did last week. I got some more savvy news. I got more savvy news than Raggedy People news. So whenever we get back from this song, we'll get to the news segment of the show.
All night long. Something about the way you said I'm loving you, 'cause I'm a bear. Anyone else would be wrong. 'Cause she got me saying, ooh. Ready to submit to ya. Get this to ya. Hey, hey, hey. Don't make me wait. Don't play no game, babe. 'Cause I'm ready to submit to ya. Get this to ya. Hey, hey, hey. I'll let you do some. Sheets, take charge of my body.
Welcome back. This is the Soul Savage Show with your hosts, EB and Q, Lynn Green.
Yeah, that's the jam right there.
That joint is nice.
That's all. Listen, you guys do that like all that. When you talk about gifts, it's people that they ain't got that much talent and four of their fingers to create something that great. I'm just saying that because I'm very critical of music, and that this the way that's produced is just really, really good. It's really good.
I greatly appreciate it. Big shout out to Joelle Deville. We did that record in like 2.5 hours, and I did that beat in like 15 minutes. So it was just one of those things where
wow.
It was like a perfect storm of creativity. So like, you know, it was just one of those things where everything went right. The sessions went right. The beat went right. The mix went right. It was, you know, it's a record I'm very proud of. And just big shout out to Joelle Deville because she did that. She sang that sick.
Right. And y'all gotta check out that EP because it's solid. And I did a review of it on my website on soulsavage.com. Y'all go check that out. It's a really dope, it should be a full album, but it's an EP. It really flows real nice. I like it.
Thank you. Please check that out. Go to joelledeville.com. And yes, it's the whole sound is like 1990 now. So it's real familiar. Got some nice melodic type stuff. So. Please go check it out. I'm very proud of Joelle, proud of that record. I'm honored to have been working with her for the last 2.5-3 years, and she's gonna make it. So, thank you for your support and your write ups and your encouragement. I really do appreciate it. There's a lot of blogs out here that are trying to, you know, jog ride and stuff and do a lot of things, but you have a genuine interest in my music and other people's music, and I appreciate all the support that you give us.
No, it's no problem at all. Y'all, I feel like y'all deserve it. Y'all music is just as credible as anybody that's signed right now. That's my opinion. Like, if you would put this up with anybody in the top 10, like, whether if it was on pop records, I would put it up there. Cause it's that, like, I feel like it would compete. I just feel like it's more of the market. I feel like you get a bigger market, that's where it is. And I don't even think you need a label for that. I just think you need somebody that can distribute, you know, you get it around where you need to, and you be straight. You're gonna get it. I know for sure you're gonna get it, because I feel like you just need the right, you know the music business stuff. Like, you just need the right in the right hands, and it's gonna float to the right people where you can merchandise it properly, where you can tour and really, or just get, you know what it is. I feel like if it gets to the right people, you'll make it.
Well, pray so. Like I said, you're always a meeting away from having the meeting that you need. So that's just been my approach, and hopefully that one day, you know, it gets into the right hands. But until then, we're just going to keep trying to create great music. I mean, that's all we can do, and not be a douchebag. I think that's the other thing.
Yeah,
don't be a douchebag. Just be a good person.
Right, exactly. But I feel like some reason most of the douchebags, I think douchebags just represented by people, because if they just represented themselves, it'd be like, ugh. Cause some artists, they're like douchebags. Yeah, it's like, or it might be the manager's a douchebag. I don't know.
It's a music industry as a whole. It's a whole nother world that I'll hear some stories one day, but yeah, you got to have some tough skin to be in the music industry.
We're going to move swiftly past the Raggedy People news, because there's some savvy news to talk about, and I feel like it's way better than talking about these ridiculous people. It's ridiculous. What about Eric? Did you know anything about this little Bootsy story? Because I only saw a little bit of it. Do you know anything about that? A lot of people talking about that.
Basically, what happened was his son was celebrating his 14th birthday, I believe. And Bootsy did a post dedicating it to his son, a happy birthday post, basically saying that he was going to get his son a prostitute for his birthday. 14 years old.
Are you serious? Really? What did the post say? Is that what it said on there?
I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, in so little words, yeah. It said... I'm going to get you some oral sex from tantalizing young woman.
get your 14. Your 14-year-old son a girl and some condoms on his birthday? Or did he even say that?
No mention of condoms.
Wow.
You can't just get him a PS4 or some Jordans? Like,
right.
Right, exactly. Like, why does it have to be all of that? I mean, Boosie's been trash. Hasn't he been in, like, the headlines for months with, like, saying ridiculous stuff, like being, like, homophobic and saying some crazy stuff?
He's pretty much been in the headlines since he got out of prison. I think that's his way of staying relevant, maybe. Because I haven't heard any new music, so... You know, I guess he got to stay in the news somehow.
All I know is Lil Boosie's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And if you know anything about Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that's the home of Kevin Gates and Don Lemon. That's all I'm going to say. And Greg Gumbel, oddly. Yes, that's everything you need to know.
Yeah, that don't sound appealing at all. The people you just named. Yeah, that's really gross. Really? You really gonna just offer your son like that? Not like what Lee said. You ain't gonna offer him a PS4 or some annihilators or something. You gonna offer him like you get him a whole what is it? A year long worth of annihilators and Skittles or something like that where he can eat on all year. You gonna give him? Oh, you get a hooker. This is what you can get. Or what is he trying? Is he gonna get an older woman or a kid his age? Or I don't even want to think about it like that, because that's weird. Just thinking about it.
From the post, it seemed like he was going to get an older woman. And then when people started firing back at him, his response was, you know, from what he knows, his son has already gotten fellatio from a woman. So.
Wow. And then it's people on the internet talking about, well, I had sex at 14. Y'all got to grow up. Like, what? Like, y'all just really out here putting y'all business out here that y'all been molested as children. Y'all think that's cool. Like, you get props for that. Like, no, you were molested. Like, if you were 14 and the person that was, you had sex at an underage, you were still underage. They're like, well, it's legal in this. Like, that doesn't matter. Like, you're not in whatever state where it's legal at. So what are you talking about? And I just hate when people throw out random stuff like that. It's like, they're like, oh, well, it's legal in this country or whatever. Like, who cares? Like, that doesn't apply here. That's
nothing
weird.
What's going on here.
Or they'll bring up the Bible or some kind of biblical text to say how right. Like, what are y'all doing right now? Like, this is weird. I just hate these conversations. It's mostly, like, on social media. Like, they'll take what that's said and then they'll create these crazy questions of, like, when's the first time you had sex? Like, what? Like, with the whole R. Kelly situation, like, they were, like, trying to figure out what was the age for consensual sex. It's like, are we really doing this in 2017? Like, talk about what age is eligible for consent for sex. Like, this is what we're doing. We can't talk about, you know, real things. We got to talk about what age you were when you had sex. It's just weird. And then people start revealing all this weird stuff about, oh, I was 12 when I had my whatever sucked on or something like that. I'm like, wow, this is getting too personal. I'm like, you need to go to a therapist for all this, because Twitter, y'all just be airing out all your business on Twitter. I'm like,
all of it.
It just be loud wrong. You got any more ragged people news? I just, he's trash.
You know
what else you got?
I hate to do this. You know, Brandi Norwood.
Oh, we were going to talk about that in a second. I didn't want to put it in a rag. I was debating on whether if it was Raggedy People news or Savvy news. I don't think it's that bad for put her in Raggedy People news. You want to put her in Raggedy People news?
I think
was going to save it for Savvy.
Being Raggedy People. It's just too much. But you know what? We can talk about it in Savvy news.
Okay, we can wait because I got a whole thing. Because I got the. I will talk about it when we get to it, but man, I'm just chuckling thinking about it. But what else we got in the Raggedy People? We already talked about R. Kelly last week. Who else we got?
We talked about Usher last week, right?
No, we didn't. I think we casually went over there.
We went over it. Yeah, Usher going through it, man.
No limit.
Yeah,
give you that STD. No limit.
Right. Man, I heard good kisses the other day, and I turned it off.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, at this point, you it's certain.
I can't listen. I can't do it.
Yeah, you can't do it, no.
And he got the peekaboo STD, too. That he ain't got the one where you can just get a, like, just get a shot for it or something like that. He got the peekaboo one, like, peek-a-boo. It just randomly. He got the peekaboo STD. Like, yeah, oh, like, what's that on you? Got the Nestle Crunch bar going on. Like, ooh.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. I hate to get visual for the listeners, but a Babe Ruth bar, and I like Babe Ruth. Yeah, he got that going on. That ain't cute at all. That's just, and then it was, what was it? Some woman got on what's her name? Quantasia Taylor or something. She went on with a lawyer.
Nicholas had, something. Yeah.
And she was, now that was wild, cause she was like, I don't have herpes, but I'm still suing for all my people, you know, that want to get
right.
in on this. Like,
she
what? Like,
just kept that quiet.
Right. I wouldn't even told nobody that. And then it was people on Twitter, like, getting memes and stuff saying, like, oh, yeah, Usher did mess with her because they found a picture of him where she was on top of him during a stage performance or something
like
that.
Yeah, there was a whole video of he was performing on stage, and he was seducing her, you know, through the music, and she ended up giving him a lap dance, basically, on stage. So, yeah, it's not looking too good for your boy.
Oh, man.
Then he had two other women and a man who have come forward now.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And then he didn't even deny that. It was mostly the girl. Now, the people was wrong on the internet for saying that they didn't believe it just because she was big. Like, that ain't got nothing to do with it. I didn't believe it
right.
from her saying that she didn't have it. Like, girl, what did you talk about?
Right, that
like,
was my
what was the whole purpose of telling that? Like, I wouldn't even told nobody that. If you didn't even have it, you should have been like, ooh, thank God. Like, that's something I could keep to myself. But you just told. And then the lawyer seemed like an opportunist, because I hear her name all the time when it's like scandal or something coming on.
Lisa Bloom.
She's like more of an opportunist.
She'd be right there.
Like, her only, like, goal is to be famous from, like, getting, like, celebrity, some kind of celebrity case and winning it like that. I feel like that's the only thing I hear about her. Or, what is she from, like, an Instagram lawyer or something like that? What's her credentials?
You know what?
Who she represented?
I think that's what it is. I think she just stalks Instagram or social media looking for her next client. It has to be. Or maybe TMZ got her on payroll or something. I don't know. Cause isn't she the lady who was defending Blac Chyna?
I think so. I think wasn't it when she was trying to sue him for that alleged tape or something he had after they broke up?
Right.
And I think so. I think that's the girl.
Yeah, I think it's her.
Ooh, that's a lot. If that's all, we can go to another break again and get to the savvy news, and we're going to talk about. Every time I think of Brandy, I start laughing because.
See? Here we go.
All right, we can go to break, Will.
Nothing now. To me, you're nothing.
Hey, welcome back. This is DUW The Buzz and the Soul Savvy Show with hosts EB and Q Lynn Green.
Yeah. Listen, Josh Stone.
I love her voice so much. I'm ready for her to come back.
That whole record is funky, and I love how she switched it at the end with that reggae. That little reggae offshoot was dope. Ooh, and the harmonies at the end, killing it. I love that song. I think that's my favorite song from that album. Yep, Josh Stone. Okay, we get to the savvy news. We done talking about them raggedy people. I was glad, please let it be only a couple people that act terrible. Cause we ain't gonna keep talking about this whole hour.
Last week, we spent the whole time on the raggedy people.
Woo, it was too many of them. We went from Duval to R. Kelly, and it was just, who else was it? Was it Umar Johnson? Was that the week before?
We went back to Umar last week a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of raggedy.
Yeah.
There's
a difference between being ratchet and raggedy. Ratchet, you have some dignity at least, and being ratchet. You can't have any dignity in being raggedy. You know what I mean?
Raggedy, you can't do nothing about it. You can't own it. Raggedy, you just ain't no good. Because I had to separate the two segments. I was like, I can't put this in savvy news, because savvy is like, you know, something credible and good for quality. Like, it ain't nothing of quality trying to give your son, your 14-year-old son, a hookah and some Jordans for his birthday. It ain't even giving nothing credible. Like, how can you put that on the internet and be proud of that? That was weird. But
all I know, Lil Boosie's had the same haircut since 1998, so I don't put my stock
in. We should have known he wasn't going to prosper then. I was mad people were calling him the South, like a South. Southern Tupac, like, are y'all, like, doing coke
crazy
or something with him? Cause
crazy.
I'm from the South,
and I would never, ever compare him to anybody. Tupac, one pop, three pop.
This nigga sound like he does helium every time he goes on a record. Like, I can't take nobody seriously with that high of a voice. Like, no, sir. I don't believe it. And you built like somebody's son. So you the same size as your son. So what you talking about? I can't take nothing you saying seriously. And you look like
that's
you about rude to kill over any minute. He look like he ain't going to be with us any longer anyway. He look like I hope he ain't sick or something like that, because he looks sick if he ain't.
I'm pretty sure. I got to take it back now.
I'm
going to take it back. Like, whatever it is, it needs to kick in for saying that. So, never mind, I take it back. If you say something like that about your son, that whatever it is you're trying to get cured of, it needs to kick all the way in. You can leave us now. But we get to the savvy news. I told you every time I say Brandy's name, I start laughing because I just think of the people making jokes about this whole situation. People that's listening in, Brandy is notorious ever since her beloved, her fairy godmother, I put that in quotation marks, ever since she has left the earth, she has been on this tangent of trying to convince other people that she's like Whitney's ride or die since she's left the earth, which I wasn't aware of this or whatever. Cinderella with her. And so let me it all started from an Instagram post. That's where it always started, on Instagram. And so people already expected Brandy. People on the internet make jokes about her, like every time she gets somebody says she gets a Google alert every time someone gets a Google alert every time somebody talk about Whitney Houston. And I think Monica wrote a post. She said, it says, this is Monica, it says, happy heavenly birthday, Nippy. You still inspire me, many, and touch hearts daily. You will forever be the greatest. You will forever be missed. And then it says, Brandy's post, it says, Lord have mercy on my soul. Happy born day, Whitney. This is Brandy. And it says, alongside of the Instagram, it says, you live on in me. I can feel your spirit inside of me and all around me. My angel, my friend, my fairy godmother, it says, I love you forever. Thank you for trusting me with the torch. I remember every moment with you, and I will cherish these miraculous moments forever and ever. And it says, I love you with her birthday and the day she died, 2/11 on it, August 9th and February 11th. And then it says she, and then she continued on and writes all these posts, which that's the funny part. She just kept going with it. And so it says here, she just kept coming with the Instagram post. It says here, she has a post of Cinderella, videos of herself covering Houston's hit Greatest Love of All. It says, maybe I wanted to be exactly like you, mannerisms and all. I didn't have your range, but everything else I could do that you did, I tried to do. I don't know why she wrote that like that.
She did that?
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't see that.
Right. And then it says,
and then it dawned
on me, I can never do what you did exactly the way you did it. And then I found myself being like myself, because of everything you taught me. You said be yourself. And later on, after you said that, she keeps putting reference on her saying, that's what's the funny part. She's like, cause Whitney said that about me. You said this. Okay. It says, I became my own artist, but with their inflections, my own artist, but with your inflection. Wait, that was a weird sentence stop right there. Okay, but with your inflections. Happy birthday, you live on in me, and no one on this planet loves you the way I do. Yeah, and this is in parentheses. It says, yeah, I said it because that is what I know, because that's what she told me. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think of you. And then she, and I'm reading it from the article, it says she concluded her Houston-related post with the photo of young Houston caption, happy birthday, hashtag Whitney Houston, the greatest of all time. You left your mark by touching every soul that has ever heard you sing. And this is where Twitter comes.
Lord.
This is from people from Twitter. They said, say Whitney Houston's name 3 times fast, and Brandy will appear to tell you about how much she thinks Whitney loved it. And then one of them said, Brandy really thinks she's special because Whitney used to say what's up to her on her way up to Ray J's room. That's called hospitality. Bye. and then somebody else said, someone could tell Brandy good morning, and she'd be like, you know, one morning Whitney told me I was next in line. That was a good morning.
man.
Oh, there's so much more on here. And it says something about her. She said, I guess she got tired of the Monica fans or whoever that was leaving these comments and was like, she needs to get her, this, I'm trying to find a direct quote from it, but they were like, basically saying she needs to get her fans.
Yeah, she told Monica to check her evil ass fans.
She deleted them.
Wow. Layers.
But the funniest thing about all of this is Monica never responds. It's always just Brandy going on and arguing with fans. Who I don't even think are Monica fans, to be honest. I think they're just people who like messing with Brandy at this point.
Yeah.
She's made herself an easy target. Like, she just keeps doing this, and I don't understand why. Brandy is too talented for this kind of foolishness. She's just too talented. I don't know why she want to be an internet thug.
Yeah, and full disclaimer, Brandy's my favorite singer, so I love Brandy. If you guys are musicians, any musician will tell you they love playing Brandy's music, they love Brandy's vocal arrangements. I love Brandy. But you're right, man. She kind of puts, she should be more secure in her legend at this point in her life. She's been in the music industry since 1993. She's a legend by all stretching means. She's probably one of the best, if not one of the top vocal rangers in the game. I feel like this is kind of beneath her to respond to fans. And I understand that she's sensitive about Whitney, and I understand that she's protective about Whitney, but the more protective she is and the more defensive she is, the bigger the target becomes, and unfortunately people have to, you know, rain on her parade. And I'm here for the jokes and everything, but I'm like, man, I wish she was just more secure in her career at this point to, like, be above responding to Monica's fans and doing all this nonsense.
Right. And I think I don't like to put alleged stuff out there, but it makes 100% sense to me. They said the reason why they're beefing and the reason why, because she's always, I've never, because she's done this a couple of times this year of, like, kind of shaving Monica. And what I heard, and it sounds true, is that Monica was telling people that she used to do coke, telling people that Brandy was doing coke with Whitney. That's where they said, I'm not, and I didn't make this up.
No.
This is what I heard, and it makes 100% sense to me.
It does make, it makes sense to me.
It makes 100% sense.
I get it, but I'm going to give Monica her props, though, because from the outside looking in, it looked like Brandy is arguing with herself all
right.
the time. Monica right. never said anything.
Because she's been groomed in the business not to, because she's just going to give you, like, good girl, like, I'm changed, and that ain't, I ain't that girl no more, so I'm
yep.
reformed. I got a husband and three kids and all that stuff. But I'm saying that she put that room out there because it makes sense. Because y'all all know Ray J was the plug for Whitney. Let's keep this funky. Like, Ray J was the plug for Whitney.
Y'all are in my music career on this podcast.
I'm just being honest. Are we gonna keep it 100? Ray J was the plug. Ray J was the plug, so I can see. And Brandy was probably just kicking back, and they got relaxed one day with Monica when they was recording that one song a few years ago, and was like, "Yeah, man, me and Whitney used to do coke all the time," and she probably just was saying it casually, and Monica was like, "Girl, you know, Brandy used to do coke with," and it probably just started spreading like that through the industry, and that's probably why they started.
I'll give Monica this. She is the classiest hood rat ever,
and
she's always carried herself in that manner. And we all know that Monica is literally a Newport cigarette away from busting somebody, bust up in somebody's dressing room. Like, I don't know if you saw this. So, like, when she was married to Shannon Brown of the Phoenix Suns, like, the commentators used to, like, get annoyed with Monica because she was so loud and so hood at the games and stuff. Like, I love Monica. I love Brandy. I love Monica. But, yeah, she's always going to keep it classy. But, man, get her on a bad day, man, and the gas going to come out, and she's going to politely ask you to slow your roll. That's what I love about her.
I'm just like, if y'all that close, then and then just tell the secrets already. Was you the one giving a dope? Was you there with her when she's cutting up some eight balls too? Just let the people know, because anybody that was around her was getting down. So we not gonna pretend it's Hollywood. I'm gonna take the whole Hollywood maze off this story. Get to the root of it. Was you down with the coke or not, Brandy? Let's get to the root of it. You keep circling around it. Let's get straight to it. Was you or was you not there with her when she's doing that coke? Because that's what Whitney was about. 24/7 was getting that lick. I'm just saying, if we gonna keep it honest, just because she never says directly why she's mad at Monica, she never directly said. That's why it makes sense.
Yeah,
to me.
I mean, and there's also the whole thing. And I'm not sure if it's rumored or if it's true that when they worked together back in the day and they got into it, it got physical. And Monica, like Lee said, she's the classiest hood rat that we know. On that day, no classy, all hood rat. I think she laid hands on Brandy.
I forgot what show it was. I was watching earlier, and they were talking about this, and he was like, and they were like, "Who'd you pick in a fight?" And I think it was Head Crack on Dish Nation. He was like, "If ain't no car involved, Monica all day." I was
man.
"You know what? You know what? We can't do this. This isn't." And then those jokes keep happening on the internet as well, and I'm like, "Man, this is very difficult for Brandy."
I'm guilty of those jokes. I think Lee
is the co-conspirator for all of them, because I think most of this I see is him on that. And Dutch.
It's
terrible.
They're jokes, man. But when did Brandy become a punch? I hate that she's a punchline, man. Like,
I know.
Man,
it's so
I'm such
sad.
A fan of her
it's
music,
so
man.
Amazing.
It's just
right. That's
that
so
whole
sad.
Family's got, I don't know what's going on with that family, but they're all a punchline. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because she goes so hard for, like, being Whitney's friend. I'm like, girl, we get it. Like,
But the thing is, it's okay for her to go hard. But the thing is, like, she made it about herself. It was kind of vain. It came up really vain. Like, I think I read something saying that, like, Whitney died on my birthday on purpose or something like that so she could leave me with something.
Right.
I saw something like that. Like,
yeah,
she's making it about herself. And that's where a lot of people are really kind of like put off by it, because it's okay to go hard for your celebrities, you know, and be a stan and all that stuff. But when you make it about yourself and, you know, you try, I think that's, it just came across real vain and real self-absorbed. And that's,
and very weird.
It turned into
a punchline. She was like,
yeah.
She made it seem like Winnie's ghost, like went inside her body. Like, yes, Nippy, your
yeah,
ghost
that's...
went inside me and my vocals can live now. Like, what? Like,
yeah.
The way she worded it was weird. It was like, yes, now your ghost can live on through me. Like, okay, this is,
yeah.
Okay, it's one thing to give homage, but now you're making it weird. Like, stop doing that. That's just a little too weird for me. But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The last in savvy news I was gonna talk about was Insecure. yeah. I've been watching it. I've been catching up on it all week, so I'm all caught up. I'm not gonna give spoilers for all the listeners. Don't worry. I know people are like, oh, I ain't watched the last episode yet. Like,
right.
I'm just gonna
too
give
bad.
A...
It's Friday. Like, come on, man.
right. Exactly. Oh man, so it's so good. It's season 2, Insecure. And oh yeah, they got picked up. Sad news is that they got picked up this week. They just announced that they got picked up for season 3. So shout out to them for getting, for Issa Rae and everybody involved. They got picked up for season 3. It's a really great show. People need to get hip to it because it is so good. And people already, I love how people pick sides. I was kind of Team Lawrence first season, just a little bit. But now I'm like, I'm not team anybody at all. Because they're, like, doing their own thing. Now they're, like, finally they... I know they're going to eventually get back together, but, you know, and it might be, like, season 5 or 6 or something when that happens. I don't know. Ain't no telling how they're going to write it. But just from my opinion, I think that they're going to do their thing for a little while. I'm just really interested in how they're going to write the rest of the season going into the next one. Because I'm really into it. Like, it's like every... Cliffhanger is always something like real good, but what do y'all think of it, the show?
I love the show. I mean, the writing, first of all, is amazing. Everybody's acting is, you know, A1. I'm like you. I'm not team anybody. I mean, I like Molly. I don't know if that's a team or not. I mean, I rock with Molly, but as far as Lawrence and Issa, I'm just like, okay. They're doing their thing right now. They're doing their thing. Like you said, they'll probably eventually get back together because I don't see it going anywhere else but in that direction.
Yeah, pretty much.
What
you think,
Lee? Well, I would just rename Insecure in my 20s. That was
reading the name of my show. Right.
And, like, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's personal, but, you know, working in L.A. and, you know, even though I'm married, kind of understanding the dating scene out there, it really is kind of a microcosm of what it's like dating, being a young professional in Los Angeles. And I think and my wife and I, we always have very spirited debates, not arguments, spirited debates about the characters on the show and stuff. And I think each character is an avatar of, you know, everybody in the Black community. You got the producer, you got Lawrence, you got Issa, you got Molly, the lawyer. So I think it's a great representation of our people, because I think it's great that Black characters can be vulnerable and be imperfect and not be an indictment on every single Black person that's out there. I think that's what I really appreciate about the show. You can go into the layers of each person, unveil the layers, and not be an indictment like all Black people do this, or no, we're not monolithic.
Right, exactly.
We don't think a certain way. And even when it comes to dating, we don't think a certain way. Especially Black men and Black women. We don't think a certain way. Black women don't think a certain way about women, Black women, and vice versa. So I think Issa Rae and her team are doing a great job. And the music is amazing. Rafael Sadiq is the musical supervisor, and
ooh,
he is kicking butt right now.
We're
going
to get into
so.
That when we go to the topic, too. We're going to get into that, too. Man, we got to talk about the last episode because, okay, sorry, people. I got to give a little spoiler. That episode was so good. What do y'all think? I love how they go to different variations of their life, their personal life, their professional life. And with Issa's professional life, I love how they're going into the schools and now they're, what was it called? We Got Y'all. That Brandon, they're doing, going into they're finally going into the schools and trying to get the kids involved with their programs and stuff like that. And that episode last week when that guy, or I think it was the week before, the principal or vice principal, whoever that was, Mr. Gaines, he was like basically making I guess little racial remarks about Mexicans or whatever. And the white woman was uncomfortable about it, but Issa was like, well, the demographic of their, we got y'all is supposed to be getting more, Latinos into their program, but, most of them that are coming is African Americans. And so that's what their, I guess whatever their job is, that's what the quota they were supposed to get or whatever, but they all got majority black people, and she had an issue with it, but Issa didn't. I want to know what y'all think of that. Y'all think that Issa is going to say something about it, or is she going to get around to understanding her coworker's point of view, or do you think she's going to, like, just be like, girl, we got it. Like, we've got, you know, people signed up and all that stuff. You think she's going to address it or just keep going?
I think she's going to keep going for a little with it. I think if it was the other way around and their program was filled with white kids or Hispanic kids or Asian kids, I think then she would probably say something. But because they're black kids and because the principal is black and it's kind of helping her along, it's making her look good at work, I think she's good with it. I think she's going to go along with it for a minute.
I think so as well. I think, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, just, I don't think people understand how divided LA is, like how segmented all the populations are in all the neighborhoods and stuff. So, but yeah, I think, you know, Issa is going to ride the wave until it gets to a point where the principal says something so outlandish that she's going to have no choice but to step up.
Right.
But I do find it interesting that, you know, the white girl, I don't know her name on the show, but she's trying to be PC about helping kids. And I don't feel very comfortable with that. I think if you're helping kids, regardless of, you know, where you're targeting, I think if you're helping kids, that's something noble in that. And trying to make it PC and trying to, you know, I think there's just, you know, I question her intentions as far as why is she doing this?
Right. And yeah, I just love everything. And then what's her name? Molly is trying to get she's trying to get a raise at her job, at being a lawyer, or whatever. And then work. And then I thought it was messed up how she dissed that old boy that she went on a date with. Like I guess because they were so much alike, she thought he was boring. I'm like, well, girl, that's you. Like you should have. That's the guy you wanted. Like you was begging almost every man you was with last week to get what you like to be married and all that stuff. And now you got a guy that got all that and you just dissed him or
didn't. Right. Issa said in the show about this guy is exhibiting all the same qualities that Molly exhibits when she dates and was, you know, treating her like an object to be checked off. Let me check this off. Let's check this off. You're perfect. So I think she's finally feeling the way she's made men feel.
Yep.
And that's going to be her issue, is getting around that, being able to date without any, number one, expectations, but two, without treating them like an object to be checked off.
Yep. I agree 100%. I think, you know, Molly, I think this is the season, especially with Molly going to therapy, she's trying to come to terms with about the fact of who she is as a person and what makes her tick and stuff. So I think as the season goes, we're going to see Molly reveal more and more about her. We're going to see more things that helps Molly reveal, you know, some things that she likes about herself but things she doesn't like. And I think I liked her arc because this character, the first season she was like a man eater. Like she was like out for the kill.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can understand some of the decisions she was making with dating men and stuff, but in this season, it seems like she's trying to be more reflective and more careful. But I think the more we see Molly, I think the more we're going to really see what her character is like, because I think until now we haven't had to question her character. We question her intentions, but we haven't questioned her character that much because she's been a good friend and she's been,
right,
you know,
right,
noble about everything she's gone about.
Right, and we're probably going to see more smashing from Issa and Lawrence. Like, Jesus Christ, they're getting it in. So I'm expecting more smashing going on both of them sides. I know mm-hmm. that was the last episode. That's what she was getting it on, and she already on to the next one. I'm like, good God, girl, you just ain't taking no time. She was like, somebody text her, and then she was like, are you, oh, I forgot what the text message said, but basically it was saying you want to hook up, and she was like, yeah, so she already on to it. So Molly's definitely teaching her how to get her whole phase out, because she's out there, already out there getting it. But we get to
He's just a terrible hoe, though. Can we be real? She's a terrible hoe.
That was awful. Like, when she took her out to the clubs or whatever, and her talking points were awkward. It was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, how do you
think of Issa's a hoe that overthinks. You can't be a hoe and overthink.
Right. Right.
You
guys
exactly. Don't be impulsive.
Right. And impulsive. And then she went to the guy, and the dude already knew what's up, because I already knew he already had a charger. I'm like, he know he ain't got that charger. And she just put that out of her socket in her house. Like, I said yours. And he's like, oh, yeah, I did leave it out there, didn't I? Like, nigga, no, you did not.
Nope.
And then the funniest part, I think, was when she left his house and she was thinking about leaving it, and then she saw his charger there. She's like, nah, I'm going to get my charger. I'm like, I know that's right, girl, because them things, I know some of them cost over $30. Like, give me my charger back. But yeah, we'll get to the topic of tonight. Evie, tell them what the topic of tonight is.
Yeah, I figured since we have the music man himself on here, I think we should talk about some of our favorite producers, men and women who, past or present, have, you know, been some of the greatest music producers that we know of.
Yep, and then
awesome.
This one we're talking about, as soon as we come back from the song, we'll get right to it.
You are
Welcome back. This is the Soul Savage Show with your hosts, EB and Q Land.
The joint right there. I love that song.
Yep.
Charlie Burrell and that guitar, killing them licks. I love, and she, I love how she got everybody from her first album back on there. Charlie Burrell and Nissan Stewart. There's a whole bunch of them that back on there. I was like, I just love Charlie. I could always tell Charlie Burrell on the record because his guitar licks, because they're so like, unique. I can tell. But yeah, that's just my music nerd coming out. I just love that song. Charlie Burrell is one of the illest producers ever. But yeah,
yes.
EB, take it away.
Yeah, so it's so many producers. And I know for me, when I think about my favorite producers, I tend to go older for some reason. The roots is from the 70s and the 80s, maybe because that's my favorite time period for music. But there are a lot of younger producers out there who are really doing their thing, like people who just jumped on the scene. K-Tronada right now is killing
man,
it.
He's a beast.
Like, everything he touches is gold. And I'm amazed by this man's talent. Like, everything he's done, everything I've heard is amazing. I've not heard a bad K-Tronada production yet.
Yeah, he's the one that put me on the Teedra Moses, because I really got into her music. I think I heard, like, maybe two of her songs, like, when I was in high school. And it was like they did real well, but then I didn't hear any more from it. And that's all from TVT. And I'll go put Scott, I guess we could put Scott Storch in. I was like, he could be a producer, but I was like, nah, cause he, smarted up all the budget for Teacher Moses album. That's why I'm still mad about that. Cause he was getting publishing through TVT, and I'm still mad about that. But yeah, go ahead. I just wanted
we could put Scott Storch in there.
We gotta put an asterisk by his name, cause it's like,
right, we'll come
like
back
that album,
it.
Like she could have been like bigger than A. Marie to me if she would have got, cause her, I forgot that producer that was on her album, but yeah, I wish I could think of him, but the one that did Just Wanna Be Your Girl, cause he's a pretty dope producer. I forgot his name though.
Who that was?
go ahead. I'm sitting there getting mad thinking about Scott Storch. So go ahead.
Oh man, Scott Storch has paid his dues though. I mean, granted, it came at a time where you know beats were kind of watered down and stuff. But man, that's you know keyboards for the Roots and Dr. Dre's, you know, right hand man on the keys and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just demons, man. Just demons.
Yeah, ruined it all.
Yeah. But yeah,
who are some of y'all favorites?
Ooh, like you said, we're going. Go ahead, Lee.
Oh no, it's you guys. I will say I'll give you guys three names. I think people just don't think of them traditionally as producers, but like production, at the end of the day, it comes down to the execution of the idea, and who can do the execution of the idea the best. So I'll give you three names that people don't think of, but man, like if you really check their resume, you'll be floored as far as what they've done. So the first person is DJ Jazzy Jeff. Now a lot of people think of Jazz from the Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Nope.
And a lot of people, and I think a lot of music heads know him as the DJ, but a lot of people don't know like that whole Philly neo soul genre that came from him and his stable. And like people don't know like, he found Music Soul Child on the street, homeless, and he let Music Soul Child sleep in the studio and let Music, you know, learn the trade of background vocals. Music did background vocals for Jill Scott's first two albums. And that whole Philly neo soul genre that a lot of people to this day still use neo soul when, you know, and other genres and stuff, that came from Jazzy Jeff's production, The Magnificent, and, you know, really breaking in a lot of great Philly soul artists that a lot of people to this day still copy and still fight from. So I'll say that's one. Two is DJ Toomp. Now, DJ Toomp's from Atlanta, and a lot of people, if you've heard T.I., but you know about that, that's DJ Toomp. Now, what I appreciate about Toomp is that his production sounds very grand. I haven't heard too many hip-hop records with layers, with horns, and there's a signature type of beat pattern that he uses But I love the fact that he samples, and I love the fact that he uses live instrumentation and trap music, because trap music can kind of sound really monotone after a while and stuff, and it can sound like the same shit with mumble rap and all that stuff. But right. I appreciate the layers. And the third one is Diddy. Now, nobody can execute an idea in urban music or in general than Diddy. Nobody can promote. Nobody can be involved from the beginning to the end. And nobody can really give an idea the hype and the bravado that it needs for it to be hot. Now, if you check Bad Boy's record label, now they're in the records and stuff, a lot of people will be like, well, Diddy's a bad business. No, he works in the music industry. Like, if you work in the music industry, you know what you're getting into with anybody, Diddy aside. The music industry is what it is. It's been that way since the late 1930s, the exact same system. So Diddy has managed, if you think of all the artists that Diddy is signed to, can you give me a whack Bad Boy artist? Maybe the band comes to mind, but other than
That's it.
Every single artist on that label has hits, has platinum and gold records, and I want to say the latest person assigned to that label is Janelle Monae. So, like, Diddy's track record of executing ideas for each one of his artists, even though they might not get a second or third album, is impeccable. So, those are my three producers. I don't think people think in the traditional sense that are producers. But like I said, it comes down to the execution of an idea.
So, are we going hip-hop first or R&B?
We can go R&B. I'll let you guys go first.
You want to wait till we go a break again to... Oh, I guess we could just go the full way. I think me, R&B, I got to go all the way back to the early days, like you said. I think in terms of idea, I think back then they would call it arrangers or whatever, music arrangement and stuff like that. I would say Maurice White is one. I think just overall, like, coming up with all those different sounds, and then Gamble and Huff, like you said, bringing up Philly and all that. I think those are significant. If you hear those songs, you know, by Billy Paul, Me and Mr. Jones, even though I hate what the content of the song is talking about, but it's like a dope story, and just how it's arranged, I love it. It's one of my favorite songs. But, yeah, I love anything with Gamble, Huff, and then who else? If we get to the 80s, man, I'm going to lose it, because in the 70s and 80s, we get into Prince, and we get to Mount Rushmore's the music. And we get you talking about Roger Troutman, like,
oh man,
Jesus Christ. We get Prince, we get to Sly Stone. We go back then, and then the way he produced music, and who else? So many. When we get to the 80s, my favorite is Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. We got to say that, like, almost. Great. They were like there, like the 80s, like almost every hit record was theirs in the 80s. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Gotta say Babyface and L.A. Reid.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta say who else? Think in the 80s before I get to hip hop.
Teddy Riley.
Teddy Riley, yes, absolutely. He did my favorite Kumo D song, How You Like Me Now. I think Kumo D had like the hardest verse, and I think in the second to last verse, I think it was, he just had the hardest verse, and I just love that whole record. But yeah, he did that one, and then what else? Who else? I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of that group. I don't want to say it's Midnight Star. It was some brothers that produced something that were.
Oh, from Atlantic Star?
I think so. I'm trying to think, because I felt like they produced, I think one of them produced for like a lot of people in the 80s, but, oh, Kashif, that's what I'm thinking of, I don't know why.
Oh, Kashif, yeah, all the way around. Absolutely.
Kashif. Oh, yeah.
I know absolutely. Some more is going to come to my head, I can't think of any more R&B. Oh, Raphael Sadiq, for sure, like,
yep.
My God, Tony, we get into the 90s now, Tony, and Lucy Pearl, and that was like, first of all, we got to give homage to just how that group, like how legendary that group, like legendary people from different groups making their own group. Like, I didn't even realize how big that was back then.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, that's big.
That's crazy. and he produced majority all that music with Ali, which is his birthday, I think today. I didn't even know that. Somebody just posted it on.
What?
Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
Nice.
The bass player, but yeah, it was his birthday. Who else? Trying to think of some more. Like you said, Puffy, all day, every day. I think my favorite R&B record of his is Faith Evans' All This Love. That is the best. And I think he produced that whole thing. And that whole record bangs. I love it. That's my favorite song from that album. Because it's a great song. That's his best produced song to me. Who else? I can't think of hip-hop. Right.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, you got to throw Timbaland in there as well.
Devontae Swing, Timbaland, Missy. Got to say, whenever you say Timbaland, you got to say Missy because she has some beats too. And we got to do a whole appreciation. We still ain't did appreciation for her. We're going to do a whole show just giving appreciation. Because what, Beat Me 911? Don't get me started on Missy Elliott and Timbaland. But yeah, Timbaland for sure. Like, they were, like, going into the after Aaliyah dropped One in a Million, they had hits after hits. And then she was doing stuff with Bad Boy, too. So she was on all their records with Total, and they did with everybody in the Bad Boy camp, they were on those records. So they were pretty much staff members at Bad Boy because they did a lot of records with them.
And we really got to give props to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis because they've been relevant since the 70s. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people know, like, Prince fired them. Like, they were in the time when they were in, Prince fired them because a blizzard got in the way of the flight. And they've been able to really remain musically relevant for four decades. They did Janet Jackson's album last year. Like, you know, they've managed to stay relevant. And, like, just a quick story. The person I worked for at Sony actually worked with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, and he just kept telling me stories about their work ethic, how they're so down to earth, how they're good people, how they love to listen, have conversations with artists. And it's not so much that, you know, they're musical geniuses as well, but they've been able to maintain a really low profile and a great reputation for 40 years. That's unheard of in the music industry. You won't find one person that's anything negative about Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And they're probably my biggest musical inspiration as well. I think even with that Submit to Your record, that's all Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. That's all of it. Like, I listen to Usher's Seduction, and I'm like, yeah.
I heard a little bit of that with the piano melody, but I think with those effects in it, I thought more of that, like, Timbaland, more. With those sounds, because you know, and you used to put like random ass like baby cries and stuff. Like, where did this come from? You thought it was a baby that fell out of the sky. Like, I didn't know what that was. I was like, what the hell? Where did that come from?
It gets your attention. And big shout out to Timbaland actually co-signed me earlier this year. Like, it was so random. Like, I had posted a remix of I combined Aaliyah's "Rock the Boat" with D'Angelo's "Chicken Grease." And, like, he liked it. And I was like, wait, am I dreaming? And I'm screaming. And my wife was like, keep calm down. I'm like, yeah, it was crazy. Like, yeah. I was like, if he co-signs it, I'm like, y'all can't tell me shit. Like, bruh. But, you know, big shout out to him. And that made my year. That validated a lot of when you're going back and forth to L.A. and you're just, you know, you're concerned trying to make placements and stuff, and you're concerned about the work and stuff. It's just nice to have somebody like put that positivity behind you.
Right.
It gives you a little more energy to go forward. So shout out to Timbaland, for real.
That was like me when D'Angelo, when he saw, when everybody from that had something to do with that record, from Kevin Miles to Questlove to the engineers and stuff, when they show love to. I was like, oh, y'all can't tell me shit after that. Like, they saw my album review. I was like, I can't tell me nothing. And I have a French story too, but I gotta save it for another day.
And we gotta get Questlove his props too. Questlove is an amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's a brilliant producer, and he's the brightest musical mind we have in music. Period. Not just urban music.
Period.
He's the brightest.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's on top.
He is. And his mixing, his mixing skills is dope too. People sleep on like that with producing. Like it takes like some kind of, like when you hear a record and you can hear like certain emphases on certain, that's why I love live instrumentation people that, cause you can hear the whoever it was that's engineered, whatever, they turned this up, they turned the bass up a little bit more on this, or they turned the drums up a little bit on that. And which I love, listening, I like reading books. Because it, I kind of like reading it from the musician's point of view and how they created stuff or when that time period. And I was reading L.A. Reid's book, and I was hella surprised that he never played any of his drum parts. Like, he never played a live, played the drums live on a record. Like, that blew me away.
I think Bobby Brown was the last person. Yeah, I think Bobby Brown was the last person he did that for.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like, he said he could never, he couldn't get it as perfect as he wanted to, so he never did it. Which made sense because because me as a drummer listening to it, I'm like, why is all these extra fills in here? Because he would do a lot of fills with the toms or whatever, like he would like double, like, I guess he had the drum programming, like messing with it. And I was like, that makes complete sense because he would always add like extra stuff to it that you couldn't do on a regular drums. I'm like, why is he adding all this extra stuff to it? But yeah, that makes hella sense. But then it kind of like deflated, like me really thinking, cause when you hear those stories, it's like, wow, you think they like took forever to do it, but you just produced that. Like, all right, it was cool. I'm like, but it was just, I'm like, damn, you didn't do at least the deal record or something like that. Wow. I was like, cause he's a drummer. Like, he's mostly just a drummer. So that just threw me. That was crazy when I read that. What else? Who else? Oh, yeah, Rick James. I almost forgot him. He's a great
Rick
producer.
James, yeah.
What? He did Rick. My favorite song of all time. Was it Mary Jane Girls All Night Long? Like, what? That is, like, the easiest cut ever that people that took from the sample in hip-hop is that one.
You know
I
what?
Think almost every rapper.
I recommend everybody go read Rick James' autobiography. It is the funniest.
It is
craziest.
It is the greatest
favorite one I've read. Yep.
Lee, I've been trying to hip them to it. Not even his career gets you like into the story. Like, it's way before that. It's like when you get to him selling coke, like before he gets to, and then selling it to George Clinton, that's how he got on. I'm like, man, this book is amazing. Like,
it's
and then
amazing.
Him, it's a
Prince
it's incredible. Oh, the Prince stories when he crashed one of his parties or something, and he said he yanked his head back and poured scotch down his throat. Oh, that's hilarious. And then his mom wanted an autograph from Prince, and didn't he say that he made him, he forced him to give his mom an autograph? Didn't it say it in the book?
That's
hilarious. Oh, and then not even just that, I love how he breaks down, like, musicians and why he felt like he should have been like one of the big ones or whatever. He's breaking down like all the different bands from like from the 60s and 70s. And when he called the Doors weak sauce, I lost it. That was the funniest thing I had ever read in that book. He called them weak sauce. I died.
No, you gotta talk about the story about how he went to Memphis. And, like, Elvis had just passed away, and he kept calling himself King of Graceland. Like, they're really right. Yeah, it's a great story. But, yeah, absolutely.
Shout out to David Ritz. That's who wrote the book with Rick James. He's, like, one of my favorite music biographers. He has written every book I've read by him. They're all amazing. So shout out to him.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great book. I keep telling y'all listeners, y'all got to get up on it because not only is he dropping musical gems, but you also get a lot of coke references. And I was like, man, he did a whole lot of coke. Like the fact he lived as long as he did, he should even be here. Like, he'd just be waking up random places. Like, how I feel. Like, what? And you still live past the age of 40? Not even 40. Like, well, how old was he when he did, when he first got
56.
On his first hit record?
Oh.
No, I mean when he first got into the music, when he got his first hit record.
Oh,
like,
give
it to me, baby. I'm trying to think. I think he was in his 30s when those came out.
Yeah,
I'm
maybe early
sure.
30s.
But yeah, for him to live past that in his early 30s, I'm like, man, he was really doing it. And then he had that old scandal and stuff like that. But yeah, he's definitely hot trying to produce records with Eddie Murphy, because that wasn't the move at all doing that. He's definitely, somebody was doing something in there. If you be like, yeah, let's do an album with Eddie Murphy, like, no, that didn't sound right. Did that, nothing in your mind crossed that didn't sound right at all. Like, Eddie Murphy doing an album, like, no.
Hey, Party All the Time is still my shit.
Still goes
party
in.
Still. When he gets to that high note, it kills me. I'm like, why is he doing this? Like, this dance. I'm trying to think of some more 80s, 90s.
80s?
Well, 90s. I'm on 90s now because you mentioned.
Oh, 90s.
I think we left out Quincy Jones.
I forgot. Like,
the greatest of all.
And people don't understand, like, Quincy Jones produced for Frank Sinatra in the early 60s. Like,
yes.
That meant, yeah, he's the best. Like you say, he's the greatest of all time. Like, yeah, there's no comparison.
Absolutely. And going along with that is George Duke. I know some people might not be
familiar,
but get your Googles out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. George Duke is one of the best. Rest on to him. Let me think.
Rest
I'm trying to think of 90s. Okay, we said Timbaland and Missy. I'm trying to think of some more.
Are we just thinking of R&B music?
Yeah, R&B before I get to hip hop, because I'm running out. 90s.
I think
Timbaland.
You kind of include Pharrell in that too, and the Neptunes. They started in the 90s.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Joint, they did with 702.
Yep. Busta Rhymes.
Busta Rhymes. Yeah. They were doing a lot of cool stuff. Easy Mo B, I think a lot of people don't understand, like, he did a lot of stuff. Stevie J.
oh, yeah.
You know, before
people
he was the punchline.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to get, listen, Stevie J produced Notorious Thug, so he can't do no wrong with my girl. He can cheat on Mimi, Jocelyn,
Lord.
The girl down the street. I don't care. Like, y'all call him a sleaze. I don't care. He made Notorious Thug. He is forever the GOAT. What? That is the greatest hip hop song ever with Biggie on it. No. He gets all the passes for Notorious Thug. I don't care what his personal life is. Notorious Thug is one of the greatest hip hop songs. And he produced it. Oh, and the whole Biggie album, the second album with those, he's definitely a game changer with that, because nobody was doing that, laying those piano parts down on that album. Man.
Nope.
And he produced for Mariah Carey and got Grammys with her. Then he got, who else he produced for in the 90s? A lot of Bad Boy stuff. I know he produced, did he do anything with Eve? I don't think he did. I think that was Scott Storch that made that one song.
Yeah, I don't think he produced for Eve.
Oh, no, they just were dating or whatever they were doing.
Right.
But yeah, Stevie J can't do no wrong with my boy. He made a Toy Story, and so, you know, I can't fault him for anything, because he made Notorious Thugs. Okay, let me see. What else? Yeah, Stevie J was definitely with Bad Boy. Oh, I didn't forgot already. Mario Winans, he was creating some stuff, too.
Yep.
I keep forgetting about that.
Mario
Winans, he slept on, like, he's really slept on. Like,
yes.
Even though his R&B career didn't really take off like he wanted to, like the I Don't Want to Know song, you know, him singing in the bathtub with his clothes still on, I didn't really like that song when it came out. Now, he did make up for the with Diddy song, I Need a Girl Part 2. Now, that was, that was the joint with him on it when he was singing on the hook. Now, that was dope. But, yeah, I think he just produced on Diddy when he did Money Making Mitch, that I think that EP he did Auction. I love that song. It's like a real, like, 70s Harlem style type of production. I love that. But yeah, Mario Wan is still out here getting a check from Diddy. The Hitmen, I almost forgot that. Hitmen.
Oh, yeah.
Squad, with Puffy had all them there. He still works with them, too. He's supposed to be doing the Puff Daddy that, when Puffy came back with that, I think he had all of them on there. And, Chucky, doggone it. Chucky Thompson, my God.
Yep.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. The whole Faith Evans album, the first one, greatest album of all time. And he produced it. Greatest album of all time. Her debut album. Crazy. Who else? I think we move on to hip hop. hip hop, I got a lot. We go from Shock G, Dr. Dre, you gotta say Dr. Dre, DJ Quick,
Man, DJ Quick, people don't know about DJ Quick, man. Like, don't sleep on DJ Quick. Every producer will tell you that he's on the canon of hip hop producers ever. He's on the canon.
Yes, absolutely. DJ Quick, who else? Daz, Dillinger.
Yep.
What?
Yep. He's up there too.
Check them credits. All, yes. Almost them every credits. Dope song from Snoop and Tupac, he's been on.
Nah, so what happened, like, there's a great story with that. So, like, I guess one of his friends or whatever was like, yo, man, Daz sent me a picture of his royalty checks. And he's like, he gets these every 90 days. And it was like, royalty checks were like 100,000. And it was like a bunch of songs. And it was like 100,000, 50,000, 20,000. He gets those checks every 90 days because of all the stuff he's written or produced. And I'm like, man, he can eat for life, man. It's crazy.
Sure enough, eat for life and smoke for life with Snoop, because that's all I see of his own IG smoking with Snoop. He look high every day. I'm like, good God. I like,
and
we swap lives for like maybe like 10,000 days or something. Like, even like 20 years, we could swap lives because you just eat smoking with Snoop. I'm like, that seems like a, because he got all his hit songs from the 90s. He ain't got to do no more.
All Pac is all Daz. Like, you check the credits. Yeah. People try to give Drake credit. It's all Daz. And I'm glad you mentioned Manny Fresh. So let me explain Manny Fresh for, like, non-producers. So, like, before Manny Fresh came around, like, no producers were doing drum fills in their beats. Like, if you look at the early 90s stuff and the mid-90s stuff, nobody was doing drum fills before hooks or anything. Manny Fresh brought, like, a marching band type of approach to making beats. And I always put him in my top 10 producers, well, hip-hop producers ever, because, like, the fact that he was able to use drum fills and use percussion and use syncopation, because back then the East Coast was running everything and they were doing a lot of, you know, boom, boom, tap, boom, boom, tap. Manny Fresh bought some percussion. He bought the marching band to hip hop, and he doesn't get enough credit for really changing the landscape of hip hop from the East Coast to the South. And it hasn't left the South since 1997. It has remained in the South. It's still in the South. Everybody bites from the South, and that's because of the stuff that Manny Fresh introduced in the late 90s.
Yeah, the intro, if y'all look up that intro from Juvenile's 400 Degrees, the Big Timers, I think it's Big Timers 400 Degrees intro, that intro is the best intro of a hip-hop album I've ever heard. It's like, dum 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 dum. Dun, 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 dun. It's like, it feel like it's just a whole jam session. Like, he got, I don't even know if those were live, like, if he had, like, live players in there, but that whole joint is lit. Getting into it before it goes to, huh? Oh, my God. That whole intro is crazy. But, yeah, Manny Fresh. Oh, yeah, and he produced for West Side, well, not West Side Connection, but with Mac 10. My favorite song, Connected for Life. That's my favorite.
No idea
Manny Fresh
produced,
song.
But Mac
10. Yeah, that Connected for Life with Butch Cassidy. It's like, what is it like? Something that dun 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 dun. I forgot the lyrics to it, but Connected for Life with Ice Cube and Dusty. It wasn't a West Side Connection song. It was a Mac 10 song. I think it was from the Who Bangin' album. I'm not sure, but yeah, it was from Connected for Life because it was one of his big songs from there. Because I remember that. That's when he had the Platts Mac 10. But yeah, I'm trying to think of who else. We said Dre. We didn't say, Shock G is like, when he brought that whole, like, George Clinton, like, funkadelic style to it, I was into that. Cause he would turn the bass all, like, he turned I think with G-Funk, he tried to take it to a whole new level with those beats he used to have on there. I think my favorite album is their second album. I didn't really care too much for their debut album, Digital Underground, but their second album is dope. And who else? Pharrell, he produced a lot going to the 90s and 2000s. I think anything with Pharrell and the Neptunes. You couldn't beat that. I'm trying to think of some East Coast. Oh yeah, doggone it, the dude from Public Enemy. What was the name of the producers? Bomb Squad. That whole scene, they shut the East Coast down with the music they was putting out there because everybody was influenced by it. Cypress Hill, Ice Cube. Everybody was, cause I was thinking Cypress Hill was the East Coast because DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill. He's one of my favorite producers too. Oh yeah, and Ice Cube, produced, what was it, Cruising in the Street, My 6-4 with Eazy-E. He did that one.
Yep.
He did a majority of NWA's first album besides Dre. Some of that on there and wrote for Dre and all that stuff, but yeah, DJ Muggs, and Ice Cube, was getting from Public Enemy too. They were all doing music together. So yeah.
Yep. You gotta give Rick Rubin a lot of credit too. He's the
kind of
hip hop production.
He's kind of the
pioneer. You know, you gotta give Red Alert, you gotta give Molly Marl, you gotta give all the cats. Rakim was actually did the production on MPD. So like, you gotta give Rakim credit.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did all the, he said that he didn't care for the production. He has the credits if you look, but because he wasn't the DJ, like people don't look at him as the producer, but Rakim did the production on that stuff. So, crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of some more hip hop producers. What's some more? Y'all go somewhere out there. I didn't thought of.
Put track masters in there anywhere, Pocatone.
You said who?
Trackmasters.
Blackmasters.
So Trackmasters.
I hesitate.
All right. So like, it's hard for me to revisit their beats, and I don't mean this in any disrespect, but that stupid ass Spanish guitar and that stupid ass shaker they used throughout the entire '90s. It's just hard. It's hard for me to revisit, bro. Like, if you listen to the Jay-Z's the Blueprint, which is many people consider is probably his second best album, the album is flawless except for one track, Jigga That Nigga, because that stupid shaker and that stupid Spanish guitar, and it sounds so out of place, Mr. Kanye's production and Just Blaze production. It just sounds so out of place. So
you can't get over that guitar and that shaker.
That damn Spanish guitar and that damn shaker and that same ass pattern they use for the entire 1990s decade. I can't get over it, man. I can't. I'm sorry. I have PTSD over listening to that.
Oh no.
I don't want to call it that.
What's some Just Blaze records? Because I feel like it's only a few that I like. I would say Swiss Beats, but he ain't really my cup of tea. Like, I just know way better than him, so I wouldn't even put him in my best. Now, that's just me. Now, y'all can call him a best.
Okay, no. So, here's the thing about Swiss Beats. Remember I told you where you're in the music industry, you're a meeting away from having the right meeting? That's Swiss Beats. Swiss Beats happened to be at the right place, and his uncle was the founder of Rough Riders, and they had no production. So they asked Swiss to do some stuff, and he's at the right place at the right time. Now, is he a legendary producer?
He was a stick-up kid with DMX, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So they was out there, like, run them jewels for real.
Yeah. Swiss Beats he's polarizing. I'll say that. I don't want to say he's not great because he's been in the game for so long. But I understand why people aren't a fan of his production style. It's that same damn drum pattern. He wrote that for a good 15 to 20 years.
I think that's what it is. It's like not creative. Like, it's not like Pharrell. Like, Pharrell, I feel like, you know, I could, like, some records of his, I couldn't tell that were his. Like, I never knew. He would have to be in a video for Mystical for me to realize that was him in it and him being on the hook. Like, other than being on Busta Rhymes, Past the Gavatier, like, it sounds like two different records, you know what I'm saying? Because I feel like he's more of a is Swiss Beats a drummer, or is he just a producer?
I think he's just a producer. And with Pharrell, like, people don't realize, like, Pharrell did Happy, and that was, like, the version that you hear nowadays, that was, like, the eighth version of that song.
Yeah, I can
DreamWorks
tell.
DreamWorks rejected that song
right.
eight times. And after that, he made Kendrick Lamar's All Right. That's Pharrell. The whole, you know, that's the new black anthem right now, All Right by Kendrick Lamar. Pharrell did that. Like, Pharrell has evolved, and at the older he gets, I think the better he gets. So, I think, you know, as far as produce, like hip hop producers, we gotta mention Dilla, Jay Dilla.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, trust, man, I almost lost my
trust,
mind. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't trust any producer that has not studied Jay Dilla. There is a certain way how he did his drums that Pharrell, Kanye, everybody admits that they cannot do. And there's a certain science to hip-hop that he was willing to explore. And I always tell people that want to get into production, you need to study Dilla. You need to study some early Tribe Called Quest records. You need to study Donuts. You need to study Slum Village. You need to study that because there's a certain way he does his drums. His drums hit harder than anything, but it's not abrasive. It's sonically the best drums you'll ever hear in hip-hop production. Dr. Dre gets close, but even he will admit that Dilla is the best, sonically speaking.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Drums, Dilla. Everything else, you can debate. I'm not going to debate you on drums, but you got to study Dilla. You got to study Dilla if you're going to do hip-hop. Or you're going to do production, period. You got to study Dilla.
Right.
Yeah,
Jay, I almost lost my mind and forgot to mention him. Yeah, Jay Dilla is one of the best. Just the fact he did all that with just on the pad is crazy to me. It's like he created all those songs, and they sound like he's playing it. Like, how could he find those samples and play them just like the record? Like, that's crazy to me. Like, he would get the samples and play them just like the record. Nobody could do that. And he would get, they said that he had a weird process because he would never, like, go back and find the samples. Like, I think he would get in trouble a lot from getting samples. And he would just, like he had crates and crates of music. And so he would just, when he get done with a record, he would just keep going and going. And he never, like, tracked it. And he never, like, kept track of the samples or whatever, and he would just keep going. But that just showed, like, how crazy his work ethic was, that he would just kept going. But, yeah.
He had a jazz musician approach to production. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand, is that jazz musicians approach music in an entirely different way. And he was able to bring that into hip-hop.
Yeah, Pete Rock. You just made me think of jazz with hip-hop. Pete Rock, all day, every day.
Yep.
He's one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, he's made the best hip hop song of all time. Troy, that's the best hip hop. That's the best hip hop record of all time. And you're not going to, Organized Noise, you got to give them some props too.
Yo, yep.
Organized Noise,
yeah.
Outkast, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
CeeLo Green, DLC. Almost forgot. CeeLo Green.
Yeah. CeeLo Green, Dallas Austin, we forgot him in the R&B producers.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I don't know how I forgot Dallas Austin.
Right, exactly. And then I'm trying to, Raphael Sadiq, I feel like just his, I love, like, what he's doing. Like, he does so much stuff. Like, I think last year he had, like, the best year of doing, like, music scores. And I feel like people don't really pay attention to it that much. But I feel like I love that some publications are writing about it. Of him, like, doing music scores, I think, with Luke Cage and Insecure, like you said, with that, and then did Solange's A Seat at the Table, executive producer. I read an article where they were interviewing her, and she said that that she basically had the songs that, and he just came in and basically laid bass down on it. And if you hear, like, I could hear, like, I think one, when she was doing showing the creative process of her doing it, when I heard what she was working on compared to when he laid the bass down, it was like enhanced it so much, those bass lines did. And it's crazy. Raphael Sadiq, I feel like, is one of the best, like, producers, like, in R&B, like, period. And I love how he, like, produces on, like, anybody that he's feeling at the time. Like, I feel like, I think it's some more artists he's supposed to be working with. But, yeah, I love, like, how he's keeping it low-key. I feel like he's going to have some of the music out. But, yeah, I feel like he's one of those those producers that does everything from like music scores and executive producers.
Yeah, you could put Sadiq in any music era, and he'll excel. You could put him in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, today. He will excel because he understands music. He understands music, and he understands composition. A lot of producers don't understand composition, and there's a lot of producers. There's two schools of thought. There's producers that understand the composition aspect, so more the Quincy Jones aspect where you're composing and you're arranging and you're putting chords together, you're putting arrangements, and you're putting different instruments together, and then there's a science as well. There's a science approach, a scientific approach as well. And Sadiq can do both very well. And that's why you could put him in any music genre in any era, and because he understands the foundations of just music and how it's supposed to be made.
Absolutely. Yeah, we ain't got to the, we ran out of time show. We've been talking about music so much. It's great conversation. We do this thing that I do with all my guests, Lee. It's a pretty fun game we do. It's called the What Is Wrong With You game. It's pretty self-explanatory when I get into it. So I basically ask you some music questions. It's an either-or game. I put two artists or whoever against each other, and you basically got to pick. You basically got to pick what I pick. That's the premise of the game. You got to pick what I pick. EB's won this game a couple times. He won last week, and I think the other time he was on, he won. I don't know. It's sketchy. I don't know. I feel like you know music, but then I don't know. I don't know. It's either or. So let's get started. Okay, Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass?
Marvin Gaye.
There you go. Ain't nothing wrong with you on that one.
Do I need to expound or do I just answer it?
No, you just answer it. You ain't got to expound on that. That was a perfect answer. Okay.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye.
Right. The Whispers or the OJs?
I'm going to go. That's a tricky one. I'm going to go to OJs. That's a tricky one.
Yeah. I forgot to say in the beginning, some of these are bonus, and then some of these are trick questions. So you got to be a little bit. I'm just throw that little hint out there. Some of these are bonus, and they're trick questions. Some of these are trick questions. So some of them you can't get wrong. So yeah, that one you get bonus for that. Ain't nothing wrong with you on that one. Okay, next one. This is very specific with Michael Jackson. Off the Wall or Thriller?
Off the Wall. Without question.
There we go. See, you
don't have to think in it.
Ain't nothing wrong with you.
I love it.
I could spend 2 hours explaining why Off the Wall is such a much better album and how Thriller has three or four songs that sound alike, but we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, you could just say that it's for Caucasian people that say they like Thriller more than Off the Wall, because that's the only explanation you would like Thriller more than Off the Wall. But we're going to go to the next one. Okay, the next one, Rick James or Prince?
Prince. My favorite artist is Prince. I got Prince posters on in my house. I got Purple Rain on vinyl hanging up in my living room where people sit. Prince.
See, that was a trick question. You could have picked either or. It didn't matter on that one.
But okay, you can make an argument. You can make an argument that Prince kind of bit Rick James. But we're not going to do that.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, the next one, Patti LaBelle or Aretha Franklin?
Aretha.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No. It's Aretha. It's just trust me. It's Aretha. And
the reason why
it's Aretha is because I don't want to spend the entire show, but in terms of the queen, I mean, Patti's great. Don't get me wrong. They're not taking nothing away from Patti, but any singer you compare to Aretha comes short in the 20th century in the music industry. Any singer, if you compare hits, if you compare catalog, if you compare longevity, if you compare vocal ability, if you compare musicianship, none of them match Aretha. Patti can sing. She's a great singer. She has hits, but Aretha is literally the entire package, and she's been the entire package for over 50 to 60 years, since she was 15 years old.
Yep.
I can't go with that. You said all of that. That sounds great and lovely. I'm pretty sure the listeners are going to appreciate
now,
that. That's all.
Yeah,
team.
Now she's
That's Team Patty over here. We can't be. I can't let this happen. No, Team Patty all day. I can't go with that. No,
EB's with me.
Right.
EB's with me. You can't.
He's not talking right.
Facts. You can't. We're going to
go to the next one.
Facts.
I got some more. See, that's why I was saying it was sketchy. I knew you was going to throw a curveball. I knew it. I knew it. That's why I didn't get too excited, because I was like, when we get to these other questions, we're going to see. So, okay, this one, Brian McKnight or Babyface?
I think production, you got to go Babyface. But singer, Brian McKnight. Brian McKnight is one of the few R&B vocalists that has mastered his voice. Not,
no, I'm talking about music catalog.
Music catalog.
Really? You want to talk about this?
No, if you're going straight music catalog, it's obviously Babyface, but I think if vocal ability is definitely Brian McKnight. I would say Babyface. Babyface, I don't really care for singing.
You talking right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to, see, those are the particular ones with the Patty and Aretha. I want you to win this. I want you to win, but it's just, you're doing so perfect until you got there. And I don't know, and EB, I know he's sitting there grinning, and
you know
I know he appreciates you saying Aretha, but okay.
Put it this way. Aretha Franklin is ranked number 5 in Rolling Stone's greatest 100, I guess, artist of the 20th century. She's number 5.
Patty, who they got first? Jagger or something? Who they got? Somebody like Paul McCartney, who was in the top 5?
You can look at the list for yourself. But she's the only woman that's ranked in the top 25. And Patty Patty is not even in the top 100.
Because white people love Aretha Franklin. They love Aretha Franklin. You don't respect. You know how many Caucasian functions I've been to, and they playing Respect. Like, that is the most. All you see is drunk Caucasian people listening to Respect. doing all these old 70s dances to Respect and stuff like that. Get out of here. Of course they love it. All right, I determined. Okay, I determined nothing is wrong. Willie. Okay, you won the game. I didn't.
Thank you.
That
one, I appreciate it. Thank
you. If you would have got more than one wrong, you would have got it. You would have got it wrong. But you won the game, so nothing's wrong with me. Okay.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I appreciate you for coming on. What we do right now is that we let, at the end of the show, we let you promote or anything you have going on. You can let the people know. So, Lee, you can go first.
All right. You can follow me on SoundCloud. It's www.soundcloud.com/LeeTrouble. So it's TRBLLEETRBL. I would not recommend you follow me on Twitter. And the reason being, I'm really unfiltered, and I've gotten into
the person that created Tyrese Wisdom's that man right there.
I was hoping to go the whole show without bringing it up because shit got real with Tyrese. But you can follow if you want to. You can follow me on Twitter. I wouldn't recommend it. It's gonna go downhill from the music. Check out the stuff I contribute to. Check out my stuff on Instagram as well. Same name, Lee Trouble. I post links to artists I work with. I love grilling and stuff. And right now I'm going back to corporate America, but that doesn't mean I'm stopped making music. So I really want to thank you too, EB and Keelan, for inviting me onto the podcast. I've been a huge follower of your work, Keelan, for a couple years and stuff. And I really do appreciate, you know, what you guys do. And I appreciate you guys keeping it 100. You're not going to find too many people in the music industry that keeps it 100. And I try my best to keep it 100. I did with the Trap Masters. I was like, but
yeah, that's real.
Yeah, I'm a genuine person, and I don't like BSing people and stuff. So I'm honored that you guys have had me on the show, and I'm going to promote and do what I can to get you guys out there as well. And just keep doing what you guys are doing, man. I'm a fan now.
No doubt.
Thank you.
Go ahead, EB.
Of course, I'm on
everything, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, EB4Prez, EB, the number 4, P-R-E-Z.
Oh, I follow you.
Yeah, you follow me. You could also check out my website, EB4Prez.com.
I know that. Keela, you tell me EB Prez. I knew. I'm like, who's EB? Did he say EB Prez? I'm like, oh, I. You got better musical taste than I do. Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah. Him Xing out. Besides him Xing out Beyonce's face on every picture on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm just
doing I ain't her name on Twitter. I just say the leader.
The leader. Oh, the yeah. Leader. The Beehive fans come in with
right.
the bees.
Yes, that's a discussion for a whole other day, but we're not going to get into that.
Oh, my God.
We're not going to get into that. I love Beyonce, but we're not going to get into that.
Hilarious. You can find me at, I don't mind putting all my social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all Qlyn Green. The website page, soulsavage.com. You can go there. Supposed to get some new posts and some album reviews out there. I was sick this week, so I didn't get a chance to put them out there, but I should have all that up for you next week. Also, my Soul Sadness page is on Twitter and Facebook, SoulSaviness. And thank you for tuning in. We usually do a savvy talk, a heathen talk. I don't think I have one. It might come in my spirit. Hold on. One of y'all got savvy. It's basically a savvy heathen talk is whatever's on your mind you want to say to people before we leave.
Ooh, you know what? I got one. Beyonce is overrated. That's it.
That's my time.
Hilarious. Lee, you got one?
Hey, shout out to, I'll give a shout out real quick. Shout out to Rebbe Noen, a.k.a. Nona. Nona's a great person.
Oh, yeah.
Great person. And she knows her music, too. That woman
has helped me. Yeah, we got to get her on. We got to get her on one show. Talk about music.
Yes, that woman has helped me tremendously when I got back into production. That woman helped me tremendously. So shout out to you, Nona. Love you.
Absolutely. And, I don't think I have one. If you get if somebody sends you a Keisha Cole or a K. Michelle album, for your birthday or whatever, just cause, throw it in the street and run it over. Like, that's the only advice I can give you.
Throw it
in the street and run it over. And get a 40 ounce and pour it over it for the rest of it. Give it a memorial for them even thinking you wanted it. Just get a physical copy of it and run it over in the street. That's my heathen talk. Y'all went, well, no, EB went heathen talk, and then Lee, the only one that was shouting people out, savvy talk. All mine is always heathen, so, yeah. I'm trying to act right, y'all. I don't ever act right. This is usually the diplomatic. They have other diplomatic programs on here, Lee, but mine is the only one where I talk about craziness on here. But yeah, thank you for tuning in Soul Sadness Radio. We'll be back, me and EB, we'll be back next Friday, same time, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Central time, and 8 o'clock Eastern time.
All right, welcome the Soul Sadness Show with EB and Qlyn. And special guest producer Lee Trouble. Thank you so much, Lee. What great interview, great show, Qlyn. We'll see you next week. Stay tuned to Studio W The Buzz. Hey, coming up in just a few short minutes, Braxton's back. Hey, the girl, the queen, Adrian Braxton. Stay tuned, folks.